Well, good morning. So good to see you all this morning. I'm so glad you all are here. As Stephen said, my name is Joel Miller. I'm the executive pastor here and have been here since July 1st, I think was my first official day. And it has flown by. I'll tell you what, it has gone so, so fast. But I absolutely enjoy every day, because every day is different, and I'm just so thankful to be here, and I'm excited to see what God is going to do at Living Waters in 2025, what he's going to do today, things that he's going to spark today, and how he's going to continue to move over the next year. And I've been excited about this message, and we are going to be talking about the Magi, and it's interesting that Elsie Preston read about the Magi this morning, because it really does tie in with the message this morning. And I promise you'll be out by at least 3 o'clock. Sorry, it's the same old preacher joke that everybody uses. Sorry, couldn't come up with anything better. All right, well, we're going to dive into Matthew chapter 2 here in a moment, but before we do, we're going to show a video that Philip had sent to me and Stephen and Fred, and this is apparently what retired guys do. They just stay home and watch all these funny videos, so just kidding. So this is the story of Christmas according to kids, so take a look.
Mary, she was doing laundry, and then the angel just appeared and she was really scared. So Gabriel was like, Mary, you're going to have, Mary, you're going to have a baby. You're going to have a baby, and you will call him Jesus. And then Mary was like, I'm not going to have a baby yet, I'm only a teenager, I'm not married. Then the angel Gabriel told Joseph that Mary is not lying. You are having a baby. And so they met up. They went to Bethlehem, which was Joseph's old town.
They ride a donkey.
A camel.
Oh, yeah, a camel.
She said, this donkey's fast.
They tried to go to a hotel, and
they asked the keeper for a place to stay. The keeper said,
we have no rooms. Literally, no rooms.
So Mary and Joseph walked away sadly, but then he said,
the only place in here in Bethlehem that you can stay is a stable. And then he just pointed the way and they followed. When the shepherds were taking care of the sheep,
then they saw angels.
The angels said, a new baby is getting born, who is king of the Jews.
The angels were singing.
Glorious. And then the shepherd said, I think we should go there and meet him. The second, I think, said, yeah, I agree with you. And the other said, yeah, me too. They had to walk through a bunch of grass and bushes. Maybe have to camp out a night. And then the wise men heard about it.
And then a star appeared.
Well, we should probably follow that star. It's pointing down to the barn.
So maybe we should follow it. Maybe. So the wise men went to Jesus.
They gave them gifts.
A stuffed animal, like a hippo one that I have at home.
Some diapers, and some wipes, and some milk, some shoes, some Jordans.
Gold ring and Latimer.
And I don't know how I would survive in that barn. Too stinky, too crowded, and ugh.
I think he probably pooped because the room was very smelly. Thank you for coming.
He's adorable.
He's gonna be our best friend.
I love you, and you're the best baby I ever seen. There, I said it.
new baby is going to change the world.
That video never gets old. There's so many great parts in that. This donkey's fast. I love that. All right, so we're going to read in Matthew chapter 2. We're going to look at verses 1 through 11, or 1 through 12. And it says, "Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, 'Where is he who is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and have come to worship him.' When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. So they said to him, 'In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not the least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod, when he had secretly called the wise men, determined from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, 'Go and search carefully for the young child, and when you have found him, bring back word to me, that I may come and worship him also.' When they heard the king, they departed, and behold, the star which they had seen in the east went before them, till it came and stood over where the child was, young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceedingly great joy. And when they had come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented gifts to him, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Then, being divinely warned in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed for their own country another way." So before I get started, I wanted to just mention this book that Pastor Stephen had given to me, and he had been using it in his last two messages. And this is called Christmas, The Rest of the Story by Rick Renner, highly trusted Bible scholar and teacher. And he digs into like Jewish history and Greek history and historians, and he just really brings out context, just amazing things that maybe we wouldn't even see in Scripture, and that's where I'm drawing a lot of my historical context, and I would just really recommend that. You can also find him on YouTube. Renner Ministries is his channel. It's really, really, really good stuff. So I do want to share before we dive into this, this is not a typical Christmassy kind of message. It's going to, hopefully my prayer is that it challenges you, that it makes you a little bit uncomfortable, and gets you out of your comfort zone, that it gets me out of my comfort zone. So let's answer a few questions and look here as far as questions you may have. Where were the Magi from? So many scholars believe that the Magi were either from Persia, Assyria, Babylon, or from the people of the Medes, Media. And one thing that may also come to mind is, like, how did they know that there was going to be this great world leader? How did they know, like, okay, we're looking for this person. Oh, we've seen the star. We're going to go find him. Like, how did they know what they were looking for or who they were looking for? So Daniel, when the children of Israel went into captivity in Babylon, Daniel was, God had gifted him in interpreting dreams, gave him all kinds of wisdom. And so he was promoted to a high place in Babylon. And we're going to read a passage here. Not a passage, but a section of the book, because the book just explains it so much better than I ever could. And so we're going to look at this section in this book. It says, "The biblical connection with Magi actually begins with the story of Daniel. Daniel's story in Babylon shows us how a godly man can be used by God even in an ungodly system. God promoted Daniel to lofty positions, and against all odds, over a long span of time, he served as a high-ranking official to the Babylonian, Mede, and Persian kings, Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, Darius, and Cyrus the Great. Daniel 2:48 tells us, "Then the king Nebuchadnezzar made Daniel a great man and gave him many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon." So Daniel had prophesied about this coming world leader, this Messiah that was going to be born. And so he ends up becoming a high-ranking official in Babylon. He makes all these prophecies about Christ. And so as he was the head of the Magi at that time, the Magi and the wise men, the astrologers, the scientists, they're all anticipating this great world leader because of the prophecies that Daniel had spoken of. So for centuries, they were looking for this new world leader because of the prophecies that Daniel had prophesied. So this is why they came, and they were looking for this new leader. Who were the Magi? The Magi were elite, powerful men, politically influential. They were super wealthy, had more wealth than they knew what to do with. And they were even referred to by some as kingmakers. Like, they were so influential that kings would get nervous whenever the Magi came into town. Because at one word, those Magi could take down a king, and with one word, they could bring in a new king. They were so politically influential, and that's something for us to think about. How influential are we? And that's what we're going to get to more here in a little bit. So King Herod started to get a little bit worried, and if you remember that verse, I'm going to read this again. It says, "When Herod the king heard this," and this, let me back up a little bit. The Magi, there were not just three of them. How many of you have heard the song, "We Three Kings"? Okay. The first line of that song has three major problems. Okay. Number one, there weren't necessarily three of them. The Bible doesn't say there were three of them. Number two, it doesn't say they were kings. Number three, it doesn't say they were from the Orient. "We three kings from Orient," or they were either from Assyria, Persia, Babylon, or Media. Okay? So they come in with this huge, huge caravan, and these gifts were so extravagant, and we'll get to that in a minute. These gifts were so extravagant that it took camels and camels and camels and carts to bring it all in to Jesus and to Mary and Joseph. And as they came in to town, into Jerusalem, they kept asking people, "Where is he who is born king of the Jews?" This wasn't just them coming to Herod and asking one time, "Where is he who is born king of the Jews?" This was asking many, many people in their travels, "Where is he who is born king of the Jews? Where is he who is born king of the Jews? Hey, we're looking for the king of the Jews. Where is he? Do you know?" And it was just constant, constant, constant asking, "Where is he in Shelbyville and where he is working in our church?" Are you asking the question, "Where is he?" so that I can jump in and dive in with God and what he is doing. So it goes on here into verse 3, and it says, "When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him." So Herod was troubled because here there's this talk of this new king of the Jews. Herod's concerned about his position. He was so suspicious that he even had his own two sons murdered because of suspicions of them taking over his throne. That's how much he freaked out over, wanting to keep his throne. So as you can imagine, he hears all the talk of the town with these Magi coming in. "Where is he who is born king of the Jews?" So he's starting to freak out. And it says all Jerusalem was starting to be troubled as well because they knew what type of king they had. they started to freak out too, because they're thinking, oh my gosh, Herod, you know, he's very unstable. He hears about this new king of the Jews. Who knows what's going to happen? And sure enough, their suspicions, their concerns about Herod were justifiable, because Herod ended up freaking out and he killed all the newborn babies from two and under. That's why the people were very troubled, because they knew that Herod was very unstable. So Herod was nervous, and this was just the thing. This, whenever the Magi came in to town, kings got nervous, because these were so powerful. These men were so powerful and so politically influential. It's very interesting the way people reacted when they came. So what type of gifts did the Magi bring? These were the gifts that it mentions are gold, frankincense, and myrrh. But Rick Renner talks about how there were many, many, many more gifts, and I actually had these on my phone, which Philip has, because we're going to play a song in a little bit. So I'm just going to try to go by memory. But there was ebony, there was ivory, there were beds, there was furniture, there was tusks that had ornate carvings in them, furniture with embedded stones, all kinds of lavish gifts that was believed to be a fortune, an absolute fortune that they were bringing. This wasn't just three men with each with a box, you know, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They probably mentioned those because that was probably those three, because they were probably the most abundant of all the gifts that were brought. And they were the most significant. You know, gold represents purity, and it was the highest quality of gold. Frankincense was used, over 600 pounds a year was used in the temple and the sacrifices, and then myrrh was used in burial and embalming. So those were probably the most significant and maybe the ones that were in the most abundance, but there were many, many gifts that came, and these Magi brought their best. They brought their best to Jesus. That's what we're going to be challenged with today, is how do we bring our best? So my question to you this morning is, what will you bring? And this is, it's so interesting the way God kind of worked all this together, with Julia asking that same question every Sunday. What will you bring Jesus? What will you bring Jesus? She didn't know that I was going to be preaching the last message in this series, and it was going to be about the Magi and what they brought to Jesus. So what are you going to bring Jesus? And I want to challenge you with this question. If what you bring to Jesus doesn't make you uncomfortable, is it enough? If what you bring to Jesus isn't making you uncomfortable, are you bringing enough? Are you adding fasting to your prayers? Are you going deep in prayer and not just asking, Lord, protect my family and keep us from sickness and presenting these needs, but are you actually going deep into prayer to where you're saying, Lord, here am I, send me. Whatever you want me to do, wherever you want me to go, search my heart, is there any wicked way in me? How deep is your prayer life? What are you willing to bring to him that makes for a sacrifice? These Magi sacrificed a lot in what they brought to Jesus. It's believed that they were gone from 3 to 12 months traveling the deserts, and 800 to 1,200 miles is what they believe that they had traveled. Whether they were from Babylon, Assyria, Persia, or Media, whichever one of those places was, it was at least 800 miles, as much as possibly 1,200 miles. They sacrificed a lot. Are we willing to sacrifice and be uncomfortable, be inconvenienced by this great king that we worship? They put aside their agendas to search for Jesus. They brought immense amounts of wealth to Jesus. And one interesting thing here to note, this was a fortune that they brought. And what happened right after the Magi left? Jesus and Joseph and Mary, they all had to flee to Egypt. And that was for probably a 3-year period. And so these gifts that the Magi brought to Jesus, Mary, and Joseph financed that flight to Egypt. Isn't that amazing? To think that God knew what was going to happen, everything had been prophesied, and God provided for their trip to Egypt by financing all the travel, the food, the water, the places they would have to stay in Egypt. And Egypt was not an inexpensive place to live. Very, very, very expensive. People lived lavishly and, you know, wealthy, and it was a very expensive place to live, and God provided that money, that wealth for them to be able to travel. So, what do you have to bring to Jesus? I'm not just bringing him a surge protector. It's not the right idea. What do you have to bring to Jesus? Okay? You may think, well, I don't really have much to bring to Jesus. I don't have a lot to bring to him. I don't feel like I'm very gifted. I don't feel like I have a lot of talent, or I don't feel like I have a lot of wisdom. I haven't read the Bible a whole lot, or whatever. Or I'm just tired. I'm exhausted. I'm dealing with some things at home. Whatever. I don't think I have a whole lot to offer. I want to give you an illustration here. So, this surge protector is like your life. Okay? This represents your life. How many of you have heard the phrase, I got this, or you got this? How many of you have heard that before? I'm going to be honest, I hate that phrase. I hate that phrase, you got this, because it makes it sound like, you know, in our own strength and our own wisdom, we can do it. You know, we just pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and we move on. But that's kind of like plugging this thing into itself and expecting power. If we're plugging this thing into itself, like digging deep into ourselves, trying to figure things out, do things in our own strength, we're going to be disappointed. There's no power, right? But if we're plugged into him, if we're plugged into his spirit, if we're plugged into his word, if we're plugged into a group of people that love us and surround us and pour into us and challenge us, and we're plugged into him, then there's power that flows from him into us, and then that enables us to pour into others. So people can then plug into us, and we have something to give them. Folks, you can't give what you don't have. So plug into him and seek him. If you don't feel like you have anything to offer, get on your knees, start fasting and praying and seeking the Lord, and get plugged into him and let his wisdom, his strength, his power, everything that he has for you to flow through you. And then others are going to notice that, and they're going to come and they're going to plug in, and they're going to want to draw from what you have. You're going to be able to actually have something to offer somebody else. So we don't want to try to figure things out on our own and then expect something to happen. We don't want to rely on our own strength. Proverbs says, lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. So what can you offer to Jesus? What do you have to offer to him? God has had me on this personal journey of fasting every Wednesday and just praying and seeking the Lord every Wednesday. And I break my fast around 5 o'clock, but sometimes 3 or 5, somewhere in there. And of course, fasting is uncomfortable. I hate fasting, to be honest. I don't like it. I love to eat. And I've also started joining another brother in fasting at the beginning of each month. And so I just wanted to share this little bit with you because I feel like it's significant to challenge all of us. So I was just maybe an hour or two from finishing my fast, and I was in the gathering place here, and it was just almost time, you know, to finish this fast. And this type of fast that the Lord's had me on is just a water fast. Like, I used to do liquid fasts where I didn't eat any food, but I would just do liquids. Well, I would end up drinking coffee all day or Gatorade all day and enjoy the fast because of all that I could drink. You know, and then the Lord convicted me. He's like, this fast is not about enjoying it. You know, like in Isaiah, he says, he rebukes the people. He says, is this a fast for me? For me? He says that twice, for me. Is this a fast for me? For me? And so that it really convicted me. So I'm like, okay, Lord, no coffee on fasting day, no Gatorade on fasting day, whatever, you know, that I like. And so I started just doing water. So I was in the gathering place, and it was maybe a couple hours before I was to break my fast. And I was meeting with Pastor Steve, and I went over to the Keurig machine, made a cup of coffee, and I was just about to enjoy it, you know, one half and half, three hazelnut. That's always my thing. And I'm just about to drink it. And the Lord said, he didn't say, I want you to understand the nature of God, okay? He didn't say, you better not drink that. Your fast isn't over. You better not drink that. You know, he didn't, it was like, he said, am I worthy enough to just go ahead and wait until you break your fast? Am I worthy enough to give me another hour or hour and a half or whatever it was to the point where I was going to break my fast? And I haven't done this perfectly. I mean, there was one day I broke my fast as I was here at the church. I'm like, I've got to eat something. I've got to eat something. I went into the nursery and ate the animal crackers. That's how I broke my fast one day. I'm like, this is terrible, you know. I didn't like, you know, break my fast with prayer and consecration. Lord, thank you for this day. Thank you for giving me strength to break this, you know, to fast today. I was just like, where's food? Where's food? Oh, nursery has animal crackers, you know. And so, but in that moment, in the gathering place, I had this cup, and it was just like a drink offering to the Lord, and I just poured it out. Like, yes, Lord, you're worthy of a cup of coffee. My goodness. And so, and this is just a one-day-a-week fast, folks. I mean, how much more could we really give the Lord? How much can we really give him that challenges us? Like, the Magi didn't just, you know, book a flight. They couldn't just book a flight and be there in, you know, 45 or minutes or an hour. This was months of traveling in the desert and in the heat and sand blowing in their faces. And it was inconvenient. It was a challenge. Philippians 1:27 says, for unto you it is given in behalf of Christ not only to believe on him, but also to suffer for his name's sake. Are we just at a point in life where we believe in him, and we're believing him for miracles, we're believing on him for everything good that he has for us, or are we also suffering for his name's sake? I want to share a story with you here about my oldest sister, Marianne. My oldest sister, Marianne, had two girls, Leslie and Jessica. And Jessica seemed to be the favored one. You know, my sister, Marianne, would take her out and do all the shopping and get her clothes and different things. And Leslie, according to what she had shared with me, was beaten. She was abused by my sister, by her mom. And she went through just horrific treatment. She felt rejected. She felt alone. She felt unloved. And on November 21st of 2003, my sister, Marianne, passed away of a drug overdose. She had attempted to take her life a number of times and finally succeeded. November 21st of 2003. My sister, my niece Leslie, had said that she didn't cry at the funeral. And I don't remember really many details there at the funeral, but she said she didn't cry. She was relieved. Just try to be understanding here. She was relieved that she was dead because she wasn't going to be beaten anymore. She wasn't going to be suffering anymore. And this is just where she was. And so she was really hurting. And so she's been dealing with bitterness for years and years and years. And I went there about a week ago to connect with my, they live in Campbellsville, and I connected with both of my nieces, and I took them to their mom's gravesite. Jessica broke down weeping and crying. Leslie, on the other hand, just couldn't bring herself to do it. My sister had also left a man who was really, really, really good to her for another man who was not very good to her. And so when we're at the gravesite, Leslie had looked under this tablet that had an inscription on it that was laying near the gravestone, and she lifted it up and saw a letter under there that she'd written, and I didn't know what she was doing, but she lifted it up and put it down and said, "Well, I see you haven't read the last letter that I wrote." She is really hurting and really broken. And this morning, I received a text. Last night, as I was preparing my message and finishing things up on my message, we were texting back and forth, and I really felt like I just needed to be responsive quickly. And she talked about wanting to go visit her other stepdad that Mary Ann, her mom, had left, and that she wanted to have some closure on things. And she said, "I just need to," and this is the text I saw this morning when I woke up. She said, "I just need to find that thing that makes me lose it." And when she says to make me lose it, she's talking about just breaking down and weeping and just letting it all go. "I'm looking for that thing that makes me lose it." So folks, what if we have some Leslies right here in our midst? Right here at Living Waters. What if we have some Mary Ann's right here in our midst? What if they're coming in, but they don't really feel connected, and then they don't come back the next Sunday? What if we have some Leslies and Mary Ann's that are just hurting, they're broken, they're wanting to take their own life, and all we're doing is going up to them and shaking their hand and saying, "It's so good to see you here. Welcome to Living Waters," and that's it. And that's it. Are we tenacious enough to, when people come in here, that we connect to them and we say, "Man, it's so good to see you here. Thank you for being here at Living Waters. What are you doing for lunch? Can I take you out to lunch? I would love to get to know you and your family and really connect with you." And the reason that's on my heart, one of the reasons that's on my heart, is because that's the way the Contis were to us. We came here in 1997. And they were like vice grips on us. I mean, they wouldn't let us go. They loved us so well. They took us out to Hometown Pizza, and we ate pizza. And they would bring us over to their house, and we'd eat dinner. And we just had such great times. But they loved us well. They connected so intentionally with us. I mean, you think about that phrase, we're authentic in worship and intentional in love. The Contis were and still are intentional in love. And I was just thinking, like, how could we leave a church, you know, that when we're...
Please accept our apologies for the technical difficulties on this sermon recorded December 22nd, 2024. Spectrum Internet dropped our internet feed entirely about two-thirds the way through Pastor Joel's message. Our backup system was not working well that day either, so we just don't have any way of substituting another recording to complete the sermon. Again, we apologize for the inconvenience, the disappointment, and these technical difficulties. God bless.